I'm Rob.
I'm E.
I'm Tommy.
I'm Dave.
Nice and proper. Fair warning, I prefer to leave first thing in the morning or late night. Black skies, passengers delight. I never fight sleep, I close my eyes and embrace it. Sweet dreams, shut them tight. I can taste it, I can't see. I'm falling through the air of the night. Don't know my left from my right. I know my death from my life. Right now, I'm in between them. It's the voice of far from up in the clouds. I never snooze, I'm steady dreaming. Sometimes I wonder if this plane is gonna stay in the sky. Sometimes I wonder if this plane is gonna stay in the sky. Sometimes I wonder if this plane is gonna stay in the sky. I look at life and say goodbye as it climbs. Sometimes I wonder if this plane is gonna stay in the sky. Sometimes I wonder if this plane is gonna stay in the sky. Sometimes I wonder if this plane gonna stay in the sky. I look at life and say goodbye as it climbs.
Welcome to the next movement, folks. We have Video Dave and Controller 7 with us. Gentlemen, thanks for being here. Appreciate your time.
Hey, what's up?
Thanks for having us.
I know Tommy's been listening to the show for a while, and it's long overdue to have him on the show. So, Tommy, glad to have you here. And Dave, we actually caught you, E and I caught you on tour with Open Mike Eagle and Fatboy Sharif here in Philadelphia. Really enjoyed your set. So, also... glad to be able to sit down with you.
Cool.
The other reason I'm grateful to have a chance to talk to y'all is all week long, I have had the chorus to Passing Lane stuck in my head, been walking around the house singing it. My daughter keeps saying, "What are you saying?" I'm glad to have an opportunity to talk with you about the music.
Oh, what chorus?
Which chorus?
The chorus for Passing Lane. You'd never know it, but nobody ever told me how to drive.
That would have been my guess, too.
It's just wedged in there.
Good. Thank you. Yeah, that's what it's supposed to do. That's where it's supposed to be, firmly.
All right. So y'all got a new project coming soon. It's called Articulated Textiles. It'll be out on July 7th, if I have that correct.
Yep.
And we'll talk about the date and the significance of that in a bit. But I just want to start by asking how this collaboration came together. Could you tell us the story?
So I had messaged Dave at one point. I think, I forget what in reference to exactly, but I kind of just said like, hi, like through an Instagram DM, I said something, and I think I didn't fully register on his radar at that point. And then some time passed and he had posted something on one of his stories. It was a song, and he kind of asked this general question, like, is this a thing? Like, should I do something with this? And I, if you catch me in the right moment, I will be full of optimism and kind of like, I like to, if I see like a fellow artist is kind of like struggling in that sense of like needing some motivation, I'm kind of happy to do that kind of talking. And the reason I do it is because it's like almost what I just want to happen to me too. I need people to hype me up too sometimes. And so he had posted it, and I just kind of started this conversation, and we just started talking back and forth, and it was flowing like pretty freely that time. I don't know if I caught him like at the right moment, but it happened pretty, I don't know if this is accurate, Dave, but I feel like it happened pretty fast after that one time. I probably sent some beats, maybe like 4 or 5 beats, and I don't know, maybe like within like 2 weeks or something, we may have had like one of the first songs, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, probably more like 2 days though. But
2 days, okay.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
it was like January 1st, basically.
Okay.
Either
so I had sent that message and then sent some music, and for me it was cool because he actually really responded to some stuff that other people just were not interested in. I don't send out like a ton of stuff to people, but it was probably the type of stuff that other people weren't going to pick. But not only did he pick it, he like really leaned into those styles. So it was cool. I think we had like a really good start, and then that just sort of opened the door, and things just started flowing from there.
That seems pretty accurate. you kind of mentioned like, some of the beats maybe were beats that maybe other people didn't like. I think the first beat pack like had other people's names on them. It was like beat for someone else. I was like, oh. But I was like, oh, okay.
I mean, in all fairness, there's probably like five people I'm not a beatpack type of person. I generally try to make a connection with someone and then I will finish things and make them for them. I think in that case, it was probably I had some and they maybe had some metadata on it. And since he asked and we were kind of moving fast, I just said, like, here, I have this stuff.
Yeah.
Normally I would not try to do the like label it wrong, but I think I may have even said, hey, I have some stuff from other things if you want to try them.
It happened fast, and it was pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, those songs came in, it was within 2 or 3 days that I sent back demos, like the first two songs probably was like 2 or 3 days after I got the beats. And I think it was probably 3 or 4 songs within a week or a week and a half, like he's saying. But like within a week or 2 weeks was like 3 or 4 songs. But the first two songs were like 2 or 3 days later.
And they're on the album.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe not the final, those first, you did different versions, but
first song I wrote was the first song on the album. And that one more than other songs is like the exact, like the demo and what came out of it in the end. They're like, oh, that's the same song. And then there's others that were like rewritten or changed. Plenty of them, like we worked on the album for a long time, but the first song was that first song on the album. And that's exactly, I would say like 95% the same. Like I didn't figure out anything new. I just recorded it better.
Well, I really like what I would call the concept, for lack of a better term, for this project. The title, Articulated Textiles, seems like a reference to like all of your creative pursuits, Dave. You're sewing, you're writing, you've got this collage on the cover, which I think I see in the background there, Dave.
That is it.
It seems to be telling a story, stitched together images. There's your sewing, which I don't know how familiar folks are with that, but stitched together, patchworks of fabric. Even the titles on this project are kind of stitched together in that there are no spaces between the words. And I'm wondering, how did these ideas come together?
Kind of just like all that. It seemed right to me. Like, I was doing a lot of sewing. That's just what I've been doing for the last year and a half, 2 years, kind of since the pandemic, since the middle of lockdown, I really just started doing a lot of sewing. And I was doing a lot of it. And it just started, like, it made sense to me as what I was doing. And kind of like, for some reason, I had to answer a question about how does the sewing relate to your music? I had to answer that question a while ago and it like made sense to me. I was like, oh, I'm cutting things up and putting them together. The more I started doing the sewing as a thing to do just to sew, the more it made sense as like referencing it in the music. I don't know. It's hard to explain. And the titles, like, yeah, those were exactly that. Like just putting words together. I had a few names for words that I liked. There were other names for songs in my mind, but it was like, no, that doesn't look good as words. And I kind of wanted words that I wanted at first to be words that like would fool people. Like, do they know if that's one or two words? Like goodbye, for example. And, you know, after a while, like everyone knows that, well, baby talk, like, is that one word or two words? There's a few different ones on the album. I don't know. It's hard to articulate it, but it's just like I was throwing all this shit together. And then when I started looking for words to call it articulated, when I looked into it and articulated had different meanings and textile had different meanings and texts and like mosaics and tiles. And I don't know, it was a bunch of words that I just kind of like liked together.
Really open to interpretation, like a lot of art is. Sure.
Like I got some of this sewing here.
Yeah. Ooh, beautiful.
Thank you.
It wasn't a literal thing on my part, but I mean, that's pretty much a description of like how I make the music too. It's just cutting things apart, putting it together. And it's the whole thing is a collage. And the more I got to know Dave, the more I just thought he was kind of like an interesting person in lots of ways. And like, so you could look at him as like a musician, but he does this art. His Instagram stories are like really funny, and his presence is interesting to me. And so on the album, I actually like took pieces like from his like stories and things like that. Like I'd see a story and it was like he said something in a way that like to me sounded kind of musical or funny. And so like I would screenshot it and then I pieced some of that stuff in there. And my intention, which this is kind of how I did it, was I wanted people to get like the whole Dave, not just like Dave on record. So like, in a sense, that was like my way of like just him talking. Like there's a clip of him when they were on tour in Europe and he's like walking up to a museum, and you don't really understand that in the album, but that was my intention, was like I had kind of learned more about him and I wanted to capture a little bit of that and put it into the record so that it wasn't just like song and then song. It's sort of like there's more of Dave woven into it.
I love that.
Yeah. I want to go back and talk about Goodbye for a minute, which is, as I think Dave mentioned, the first song on this project. Dave, it feels like you're doing a lot of reflecting on this track, and I think that's true throughout the entire project. But I really like the way you're providing this analysis on your life by using an airplane and the act of flying to describe the journey you've taken thus far and what might come next. Feels like there's a lot of layers here, but I want to specifically focus on your career as a rapper and how some of the lyricism might apply to the future. So the second verse starts like this. Don't get me wrong, not that I want to be gone. I fly a lot, and every time that the wheels leave the ground, I'm astounded, I'm amazed. I've been obsessed with paper planes. I love the way a bird can naturally navigate and aviate. It's great. And the chorus goes, sometimes I wonder if this plane is going to stay in the sky. I look at life and say goodbye as it climbs. There was a point in your life when you considered yourself retired and pursued other interests because you said it wasn't working for you. Fast forward to 2023. How sustainable does rapping feel for you now, especially when you consider your other interests and work? Do you question how long you'll be doing this? And does it feel like the clock is ticking?
Yes and yeah. I mean, a lot of this album, it has to do with travel. And like, that's only half rap. Like the other half is reality TV, which is what I've been, that was like my career for many years, and like I did a lot of flying and a lot of traveling over that. But so it's like I always see rap as a maybe, because everything's a maybe. Like I work freelance, I've been freelance and been openly employed or whatever. I'm not, you know, fun employed a lot of times for many years, like before pandemic time. So like that's just always how I live. So rap feels very, like it's always gonna be something I do. I've always done it. Like I did it, I made beats, and then when I retired, that was like funny to everyone else who knew me, because I'm like, oh, I'm retired, and they'd be like, yeah, right. And like it was always there. I was still making beats and writing raps. I didn't have an idea. So now I've got somewhere for it to go and people to hear it sometimes and stuff. So it's like I imagine I'm gonna keep doing it, but I don't know how viable it's gonna be, or if it's gonna, how long it's gonna be making me money. I don't know if this is gonna make me any money, you know, now. Yeah. Like it's, you know, it's up and it's down. So yeah. So I definitely see it as a maybe. And then the song was like, it was less general for me. It was really more about flying, like straight up, because people literally would always ask me, like, you know, how do, you know, you fly so much, and you know, aren't you scared? And it's like kind of like, yeah, every time, like I think about, I'm always wondering if the plane's gonna stay up, like who cares. But like, I don't know. It was just like a nicer way to have that thought. Like,
yeah. And I wondered that too, because I know that you probably have to travel a lot for work, especially like when you consider rap. But I also sort of looked at it as a metaphor, which is just funny how that happens.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess they are, you know, it's like I have to look back at the songs and figure out what they are later to me. Like, what was this? And I'm like, oh, that's like a little pre-flight, you know, meditation, I guess, or, you know, like, oh, I wonder if this is going to work, you know? And then like, why do you even do it? Like, well, you know, I've always been amazed. I've always liked planes. I got to go work, but you know, I don't even know if it's going to, this thing's crazy. It's kind of shaky. It's up in the sky. You know how big the sky is? You know how small a plane is? Boats? That's even worse. I was on a boat. Jesus, that ocean is so damn big, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That terrifies me.
Very risky. It's all very risky.
Very much so. Yeah.
You know, y'all might not know this. This is literally the first time me and Tommy have like spoken.
Really?
Yeah, now you forget.
Well, we spoke once, but that was very different. Like we spoke in San Francisco at a show,
face to face.
It was so that first time we met face to face was at a show. So it was loud. he was about to go on. So, I mean, there was that aspect to it. And then in general, I'm quiet. And to be honest, if I go to a show, I am not a frequent talker or a loud talker. I start to lose my voice at a show like halfway into it. But I stuck around and kind of like helped him with the merch table at the end. So we have
briefly... but I don't even remember that part at the end. You know that.
I think you...
The end of the night was quite a blur in San Francisco.
I think you're in a different place at that point.
Yeah, because they were talking the next day. There was a Twitter conversation like, oh, it's cool to talk to Video Dave about. And I was like, what? I didn't talk about that. Tommy was like, oh, no, you talked about it.
Oh, shit.
It's funny because I was actually listening to a different podcast with there's this producer, The Expert, and he did this project with Stick Figa, and they were talking about how they hadn't actually talked to each other until this interview. And it sounds crazy, but I think for some people it just works. And like, I think Dave and I would be completely fine in it, like hanging out and but he lives in LA, I'm near San Francisco, and but we're also just pretty fluid with Instagram DMs. It's like not pinging you like a text message. It's like when you're ready to respond. And a lot of the times we're both just on there. So we'll just chat with each other through there or email. It sounds like really cold and sterile, but I think for certain people it clicks. And like if like I send him music and he responds to it, like there's more to the conversation than like we would have to say out loud. Like sometimes things happen, or I feel like in general, like we have like a really fluid, like everything happened pretty fluidly, and like we were constantly talking to each other, and he's busy doing stuff. I've got my kids and work and things like that. I'm mostly doing stuff at night. It probably would have taken us longer if we were trying to like nail it down to like traditional communication or like do things together. It probably wouldn't have happened. But in general, I feel like we like actually had a pretty, the album took an interesting course. Like we had times where it like, it was rapid fire, just like really flowing. And then like he went on tour. And so there were these pauses, and then he sent me stuff and I'm working on it. So we had like, it's like a year and a half, and it was kind of a back and forth like trade. Like he would do something and send it to me. I'd work on something for a while. And then we had some times where like nothing was really happening. Just like a little pause in it. But overall it like flowed really well. It's not the only album I've done this way. I think it's just the reality of having kids and working is like, I mainly do music from like 10 to 1 at night. So there's only so much like real interaction you can squeeze into those hours. But yes, this is like the longest Dave and I have, the most words we've verbally exchanged.
Well, we'll see how you feel about each other after we're done here.
We're going to cancel this release.
I want to ask you both about the track, the plug tune.
Due to a clue of the naughty noise called plug tuning, I drew my own views on what I should be doing. I run around the world chasing money, making music. People always like, David, I don't know how you do it. How much you charge for a beat, I never figured it out. I kept them all to myself, so selfish. What do you make in a week? I used to work steady, now I'm steady working on some shit I can't touch. I can feel it though, so can, you can, too can. Follow your nose to the trees, see the birds, mountain raps in the snow. And the bees, I'm absurd, bouncing tracks in my phone for 3 weeks. Disappear out in vans on the road for free beers or 4 drink tickets. The tickets only get you well liquors. I remember up only to a certain limit. I should have took a picture, it would have lasted longer. I'm finna flip the scripture, book a days with video, any studio. Catch me outside blowing trees, spitting witty flows, wasting my time. Let my mama tell the crew of the naughty noise called plug tuning. I drew my own views on what I should be doing.
Seems to me to be a pretty clear nod to De La Soul and their influence. The beat almost sounds like a nod to De La as well. I've just been wondering about when the track was written and produced. What was the timing there?
That was back in January of 2022.
Okay.
That was one of the first four.
Yeah, it was a early one. So I had the beat. I didn't say do this or anything. It probably just prompted itself. And I think you had done the little singing part. I don't know if that's what sparked it for you or how it came about, but we weren't shy about our mutual love of De La. I think that like probably came up in conversations, and we had probably talked about like, I think maybe Balloon Might Stay is your favorite and De La Soul Is Dead is my, we probably like discussed many times De La, but so it's definitely not like, anything we're shying away from it and the title of it, Dave could say more about that, but the title of it is definitely a reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like that one, was like I say, one of the first three or four songs that we worked on. So we did end up having all these conversations about like favorite albums and which De La album is our favorite, but I don't know if we had actually had all that by the time we were working on that song. We had definitely, both agreed that like we liked Prince Paul and Native Tongues, like that was like agreed upon as far as like, oh, you know, what are we going to do for now? I'm like, I don't know, but I really like Prince Paul, you know, like,
yeah.
And it wasn't even like a, so we should, oh, I like Prince Paul, so we should, like, we never got to the so we should. It was just like, oh, I really like Prince Paul. Oh, I really like Prince Paul too. I really like Native Tongues. I really like Native Tongues. And then conversations about what we liked, but like, but after that first song was just kind of, we had both agreed that like, we both like Prince Paul and Native Tongues and we should work on a project. And you give me like three or four songs and I'm like, oh yeah, these work. Like they give me a vibe like this. And I was like, you know, this one gives me like a De La vibe kind of. And that was like, I wrote that one like four times. Like when I look in my notes for the lyrics and shit, like that one's the plug tune four. And like, I wrote that song, like that was one of the first ones where, because I wrote, I think that might have been the second song that I wrote for this project, second or third. But the first one was Goodbye. There were no notes. He didn't offer notes as far as like, you know, maybe you should try it. He was like, oh, I like this. And I'm like, yeah, so do I. The one, this one, the plug tune, like I sent him a song and he like was like, oh, I don't know if I like this that much. And I was just like, man, like, you know,
I think
who says that, you know? But
Normally I would not do that. I think it was just, it was very topical and had like current names in it. And I wanted it to last longer. Like, so whenever it came out, I didn't want whatever the names mentioned in it to sound like an old reference. That was the one that it was, right? Direct.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so that,
I, like, brought
that was
up Elon
my,
Musk and shit or, or what's
yeah,
his name?
It was,
Jeff Bezos.
It was kind of very current, like at that moment type of things.
Those names will last the test of time in a way, but at the same time,
I think just, the song we ended up with is way better and
yeah,
is
it's probably a better
is
song.
Time more timeless.
Yeah, but like the plug tune two or three was like straight up about De La and like, or like Letter to Paul, like. I never even sent or recorded that one or sent it. Well, I recorded it, but I never sent it. And like that one was like straight, like, Dear Paul, you know, thanks for making out. Like, I don't know. It was way more that vein of a song. I don't remember what the words were. I'm not going to pull them up and read them right now. But it was like that. And then I was like, no, that's too, you know, that's a little too on the nose. So then I decided to go more the direction of like, oh, you know, why do I even do this shit? It's like, oh, it's their fault.
Yeah, which I think is perfect because like we didn't intentionally try to do any De La or Native Tongue. Like I think when we discussed it, it was just sort of an understanding of things that we liked and like that, yes, we could do different things. And like if this little odd thing is there, like trusting that it's all part of like a bigger thing. I don't think we intentionally made any song, to be honest. Like they just all happened sort of naturally. Like I either had the beats or he prompted me on some of the music. I prompted him on some of the songs. Like I put things in there. Like there's one song that has sort of like cartoony ad-libs that he bounces around. And I put him in there first and I asked him to write to it. But like you were saying that the song ended up, and after De La went to streaming and Dave passed, I think everyone was like talking about them more. And you know, when I was thinking about it, basically it is what you're saying, is like the reason we're doing what we're doing is because of the music that they did, because we consumed it at an age where we were like really impressionable, and they did this thing that like probably like spoke directly to us. I mean, it Prince Paul is my favorite producer, so it's, I don't know if people listen to my music and like make that direct connection, but like whatever doors he opened in terms of what is okay to do, what sounds and all those things, they're all just like in there in me in some way. And I think it comes out, like I think it's our own thing, but yeah, definitely like we owe something to them just for like coloring the world in that way. Like it allowed us a space to do this kind of stuff too.
It's interesting because whenever I started listening to Articulated Textiles, I just dove in. I wasn't looking at titles or anything like that. And I was listening and I was saying to myself, this sounds like an album that De La Soul would have made with Prince Paul. Like I immediately thought that. And it wasn't just because of the plug tune. It was just like the feel of it, the sound of it. So it's just interesting to hear you talk about it.
Yeah, I think we both knew that it wasn't like, it's weird because we never really said, hey, let's make an album that sounds like De La Soul or Prince Paul. It was just an acknowledgement that that's what we liked. And then, you know, he's sending me beats, I'm picking beats. And for me, there was definitely times when I was writing a song or doing something, I'm like, this is kind of weird. And I was like, yeah, fucking Paul would do it. Paul was weird, you know, WWPD, you know.
And I think maybe, I don't know if you would agree with this, Dave, but I think, at least for me, the reason the album works so well is because we didn't know that about each other. And we sort of just found this thing together, like a mutual interest. And a lot of the beats, like people, I'm sure other people wouldn't have picked them or understood where I was trying to go with something. And not only did Dave pick it, but he like really leaned in on that. Like the Baby Talk one, someone could, that's kind of this sort of like almost like sleazy jazzy type thing. Someone could have just done something sort of straightforward into it, but he like went all the way with it and like really matched the music in a way that I didn't even expect. So to me, the whole process was cool because I think we were kind of surprising each other at each point. Like I'd send something that maybe he wasn't expecting. And when he'd send it back, it definitely wasn't what I was expecting. So yeah, it was a cool process for me.
I want to ask about Pardon Interruptions. And I'm really curious about the production. I was before, but I'm even more curious about it now, because hearing you talk about how this album came together, sounds like you weren't necessarily, Tommy, making beats for Dave. It just sort of came together that way. You already had these beats in existence and the project just came together how it did. But when I listened to this song, it really felt like it was tailor-made for Dave and the other MCs on here. So this features Open Mike Eagle, MC Paul Barman. So it really made me curious about the construction around the production and how it came to be. So I'm wondering, like, did you make any edits after the verses were laid down, or are you just sort of like in terms of accommodating the verses? Because that's how it feels, right? It feels like it's really highlighting what each MC is saying on here. So did you do anything to sort of really accommodate that whenever you were going back and listening to? Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I think maybe at the beginning of the conversation, like, I did send him some that I already had, and I think that's what started it. But then I definitely made new stuff for him.
I see.
It's probably like 60% was new, and then maybe the other stuff like I had. But I modify, that's why I'm not really like a beat pack person. I'm more of like a post-production person. Hmm. So I definitely like when they send something back, like I always go back and do a whole bunch of stuff. So like on that song, he says a thing and it tips me off. Like my brain will think some strange thing and I'll put something in there. So yeah, it had that structure. Oh, and the song, like, he said something and I think I asked something and we were talking and he told me what it was in reference to. And this happened a few times. I didn't understand what he was talking about half the time. Like, I just didn't get it right away. And then he would like, it sounded maybe like I just took it at surface level and then he'd tell me what it meant. And then I'd be like, oh my gosh. And then I'd go back and I'd find the thing he was referencing. And we'd stick the thing in there to like give it more context. So there's the like, they gotta throw a bone in there. You got a stew going. So there's little pieces of that kind of stuff where if we hadn't actually had that conversation, it probably would have missed that. So the original song was like the simplest version of the beat. It was just the drums and the sort of like droning voice. That's all it was. And then they did their thing, and then we had the idea of kind of each verse is almost like its own little piece, and it goes back to the little intro that resets everything. But yeah, on each,
it was only one verse when at first it was just one verse, and I was like, I wanted to bring it back and like, yeah, let it end though and come back. Like, I really liked the way that beat sounded, and I was like, oh, that'll sound great.
Yeah,
if it ends and then starts again.
Yeah, each person gets like their own sort of like little touch. So like Dave has the unbelievable thing. Mike mentioned some birds and like the drums change and the birds are there. And then Paul like has his little touches too. So and some of that is just me not wanting it to be like repetitive. So like I do little change ups to do things. But yeah, so in the whole project, there was lots of editing after the fact.
Got it. Yeah, it did. Like I said, it just feels like this was really tailor-made for everybody that was on the track, and that's exactly what you did.
A lot of the times the vocals went in on sort of a straightforward thing, and then I'd change things after. Like some of them, what do you call it, screen time now, is that what it's called? He recorded it to a completely, the drums are the same, and I changed all the music. Then he actually re-recorded it to the new music after. Like, I basically remixed it, and then he went back and redid it to make it fit more. But so lots of that stuff would happen. Like, I'd hear what he did, and I would modify things to fit what happened.
Yeah, because most of those songs are like, what made it to the album is probably the fifth or sixth recording of most of those songs. So, and some of them pretty late, like pretty late in the game. I thought I was done with the album, then I was like, nope, we're recording these five songs.
Yeah, I'd be like trying to finish things up, and he'd send me a message like, you're gonna hate me, can you put things on there? We'd mastered the album, and then Paul Barman sent a new verse.
Yeah, Paul wanted to change his verse after the album was mastered. It was like,
so that's a second verse he did. Yeah, so it was like
he called me up and made a compelling case. Like, not that he had to fight for it or anything, but like he just called me up and was like he apologized too. Like, man, I'm sorry, but like, listen, I really like this verse better. But like, we just went through, and I'm like,
and it was like 9 months later.
Yeah, it was it was months later, and it was we had finally mastered. It was like, all right, this album's mastered, and then and it was like, all right, fuck it. But you know, at that point it was like we had been working on it so long. Like, I wanted to release it back in November at a certain point, November of 2022. Like, there were times where I was like, I'm done with this, I want to release it. And by the time Paul wanted to change his verse, it was like, we waited this song, like, fuck it. Like, which is interesting because you had mentioned asking about the date that it comes out. Like, you had mentioned that, but that got determined by dealing with Fake Four. Like, they're the ones that chose July 7th. And it wasn't till that happened that I like really started thinking about July 7th and realizing that that was the first day I ever sold anything.
Oh, wow.
Was July 7th. And during pandemic times when July 7th came, like July was when I started again. Like first time I ever sold was for a little kid for her birthday party. And it was her birthday gift. And I sold her these stuffed animals because she asked me to. So that's how I know it was like, it was July 7th because it was at her birthday party. I'm sitting there sewing these animals. And then during pandemic times, I think it was actually July 4th, when I pulled out my felt out of my bag in the middle of lockdown, like, oh, I've got this felt. Maybe I could, you know, maybe I can entertain myself. So I was bored out of my mind. And that was July 4th. So it was like about July 7th, like approximately. And I'm like, that's really strange that July 7th comes up. So then I put out a song like a few weeks ago that's not on the album, but it's featuring audio that I recorded on July 7th with that child because it was her birthday, her three-year-old birthday, when she told me about baby birds eating worms. And I had recorded that and had it on my Instagram because it was just like my favorite video of hers. So I was like, oh, I'm using that audio.
That's, wow. That's incredible. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, we just did that song a couple weeks ago. Just did it really fast and then put it up.
Yeah, because I was like, I wanted to write something about July 7th. It was like after the whole album and putting it all together, I was like, oh, wow, this is all related to July 7th. Let me do a song about it.
All thanks to Paul Barman.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? No, at that point, I think it's still like by that point, I was still expecting a different release date. The Fake Four was like, oh, no. Like they put an end to it. And I was just like, because then I was ready to go in June. That was, in my mind, I'm like, fine, it'll be June. And then they're like, no, how about July? And I was like, damn it. But then it was like, yeah. Oh, July 7th. Look yeah. at that symbolic meaning.
Right.
Well, that's shit the, happens for a reason.
That's the hard part of doing
I don't know.
Music.
You believe that?
Do I believe that? I wholeheartedly believe that shit.
Yeah. Things yeah. happen for a reason. I don't. I can't let myself believe that.
Really?
Yeah, I think that. Then it's like too... That's too main character energy for me. Like for me to believe, okay. like everything happens for a reason. Like,
like the oh, shit, wow, yeah.
it's a good thing that bus crashed down the street. It didn't come in. Things happen. That's for me. Like,
yeah. I don't know, man. I believe in signs, and I've gotten a lot in terms of direction. So that's as corny like as that shit sounds.
That plane staying up. I don't take that as a sign. That's just
yeah.
That's just like, oh, wow, another plane. I made it on another one. All these hundreds of flights. Like, I've never even really had a very bad flight. And I don't think there's any signs. Or there's no, that's just like, man, I'm a lucky. I'm lucky as
that shit just is what it is. I can see the other side of that argument for sure. So I respect it.
I don't put too much into that. But July is the 7th month. It's the 7th day of the release, right? Controller 7.
See what yeah, I'm saying? Yeah, you see what I'm saying? You see what
triple,
I'm saying?
Triple seven.
Yeah. Come on, man. Yeah.
It's wild. This day was predetermined back that's right. back in 2011 when this kid was born.
That's the way it was supposed to be, man.
It did not always feel that way. There were times when this doing the music, I would say, was probably one of the most fun things I've worked on. And I think it all just it was very fluid. The thing that worked against us was it was so fluid. Like we did everything fast and like really spontaneous. Then sometimes doing the technical pieces caught us later because there were some technical issues that just were really difficult in file exchange and things like that. So we definitely, I think we worked on it for a long time. So there was this feeling of like, we just want to be done and get this out. So waiting felt really hard, and things have changed so much where now you could just like that song, we could just make it and put it out, but it makes sense to do the waiting. It's just always really hard to do it.
Mm-hmm. I bet. Well, continuing down the Native Tongues path, the track Soup Jamo, there's a nod to Tip and his opening verse on the hop. Inside the ghetto or in a sunny meadow, I'm gonna make you dance, whether woman or fellow. So hearing Dave repeat these words over and over again this week when I was listening to the project, it made me wonder about audience reach and how important that is to each of you. When you're creating music, do you often think about the people and the communities that will access it?
I do. Yeah. When I'm writing, I think about who's gonna hear it. I always have, like, I mean, that's what I started doing this for. Like, it, I started writing raps because of open mic, because of, not open mic Eagle, open mic nights.
Yeah,
which open mic Eagle was actually there at.
But see, it wasn't,
yeah, like he was there because we went to that, we met each other in college, and that was one of the things, like that open mic night was a huge deal. It was called Culture. So like when I first started going to Culture, I didn't consider myself as someone who was going to get up there and start speaking. But I think, I don't know, it took me a few months, but like being at Culture, which meant, because you learn through understanding reality every day, sometimes the E wasn't always there, because you learn through understanding reality. Sorry, E people, if you're listening. But that got me into writing, and like that was for other people, you know, like I was in a room where people would get up and speak, and I was like, yo, I want to do this. I want to speak my thoughts to these people. So all these years later, now I'm recording it, and people are 100% going to hear it. Like, I know now more than any other time that I've been making music that people are actually going to hear this shit. So I can't help but think of them. If I didn't, that'd be amazingly freeing. I wonder how amazing that would be if I could still just be like, I just write whatever I want and never think about people. That'd be great freedom. I don't have that.
Yeah, I don't think I think of anyone in particular. I just want as many people to hear it as possible. But kind of like what Dave was saying, is like there is like a freeing thing in not caring. And I think for me, it's a little complicated because I can't say like I care. Like, I don't try to make music that I think a lot of people will listen to. I think regardless of what I even intend, just a thing comes out of me. It's just my process. So like I might kind of try to do something, but it always just comes out the way that I'm gonna make something. And I can recognize that that's not for everyone. So I'm not ever thinking like, oh, this is gonna like blow up. Like there's like an audience for certain things. I think like this record, like, I think anyone could really enjoy this. And the thing I like about it is it's fun, and Dave has this sincerity that I think like if people took the time to listen to it, that there's just something refreshing about it. I would love to have things be totally successful, but I also have like a fragile ego, and if something went onto a bigger level and I got some like terrible review, I might just stop making music for a while. So I've got that reality. I mean, I'll always do, I think Dave said something similar. It's like, I just do this to do this because it's like always going to be something that I do, whether it's making me money or anything like that is a different thing. It's just, it's like my outlet. So I do think about like, I might think more about the person that I'm working with. Like if I'm doing it myself, it probably just comes out a certain way, but I'm not saying like I tried to like do something totally different with Dave, but like I took into consideration like Dave and his music. And I also kind of thought about like things that like, I would like to hear him on this kind of thing, or we should try to do this kind of thing. So, but I'm not like intending it to hit like a certain market or anything. I just, in the end, I just want them to be good records. And I'm old enough that I always want them to be albums. Like I will always make a full thing. That's just kind of, I'm 44. So that's, I'm that age. So that's, if I aim for anything, that's what it is. I'm just always going to try to make like a full project. Where exactly it lands, it could go anywhere.
Yeah. So the last track on Articulated Textiles is called Index/Acknowledgement. And it opens with Dave saying, in summation, in conclusion, me and Seven mixed our brainwaves convoluted. Talk to us about what it looked like when y'all were making this album. Did weaving together your ideas and individual stories feel like a complicated process?
Not that it was a complicated process. It didn't seem like a complicated process at all. It was just some IG messages you know, and they'd be about the music, or then about all kind of other shit around other things. So it was just like conversation and beats. Like it didn't feel complicated at all. It didn't feel like a process or feel complicated. Like the part about the technical files back and forth and some of that kind of stuff maybe felt complicated at times, but not the mixing of what we were doing. Like that was actually pretty easy. Just like he was sending beats. I used more than not of the beats that he sent. Like I didn't use them all, but like most of them. And then there was at one point he just sent this like 60 minute file that was, I don't know, maybe 15 or 16 beats. And I was like five or six of those. I'm like, oh, those are great. And then he had to like finish them, but then he would send back some completely different shit. And I was nervous, like screen time. I didn't want that to change. And then he sent it to me and I was like, no, I don't like this new version. And then like 2 hours later, I was just like, oh yeah, this new version is way better. But but that was just like, I didn't want a new version at all. Like he told me he made a new version and I was 100% in my mind like, oh no, I don't want a new version. Like I really like what's going on here. I had no intention of saying yes to this new version. So then I heard it and I'm like, nope. And then he's like, maybe you should listen to it more. And then like an hour later, I'm like, yeah, actually this is way better. and then I think like even Passing Lane, he told me that he changed the, he's like, yeah, I added this bass line. And I'm just like, I don't want to hear nothing like that. And then when I heard it, I'm like, oh shit, make that longer. We need a guest verse. Like when I heard the bass line, I'm like, oh, make that longer. It needs a guest verse. Like I knew it. I kind of knew I wanted a guest verse on the song, but it wasn't an emergency until I heard the bass line. And I was like, oh.
I think the whole process was like pretty easy, except when we would hit. The one thing I would say worked against us was there were demos, and the demos got us sometimes where we really loved a demo and then couldn't, like we needed to fix it for some reason and we couldn't get the same energy or feeling back. Or the screen time one, like I sent a beat where to me it was going to be like a short thing. Like it only had a lifespan to be interesting to me, but he did something much longer. And it was, to me, it's like, I can't have this be this thing for this whole song. So I needed to do something to make me feel good about my part of it, which is kind of tricky because like I pulled the rug out from under him and like changed everything. So I totally understood what he felt. In the end, we landed on something. Like he got some feedback from someone that like the vocals, like that maybe the new music was better, but the vocals weren't in the same mood because they were recorded to a different tone basically. But also things, yeah, like on Passing Lane, originally it was just kind of the same music for the whole thing. And then I was really nervous because we did have some of those interactions where I changed something and he did not like it. And on Passing Lane, I changed it and I like really loved the part that I changed. So I was afraid to send it to him. And then it was the complete opposite. He loved it. And then it became like a whole different chunk of the song. So yeah, we had, and then the Index one had a similar type of thing. Like it started very basic. Like the way the song starts, it kind of was that for the whole thing. I had given him this idea of it being the culmination of the album and him sort of weaving in pieces from all the other songs, and that they all just sort of in the end built up into like a mess. Like they were all just sort of building and like getting more and more intense and coming to an end. It's not exactly that way, but what we started with was like really simple. And then I went back and did all kinds of different things to it. And, so it was, there was a lot of back and forth with things. Sometimes it, like I'd do something and then he would end up re-recording to match what I did. But in all of it, I think we did it really casually and spontaneously. And that was like the best part. It was so fun. But then technically a few times we did it so casually that it was a pain in the butt to go then switch to like pro mode where like, all right, we got to like have good files to mix this. Yeah, but overall, the whole thing, I'd say, flowed very freely. Like, we really were just bouncing off of each other.
I think there's something cinematic about Tommy's production. There's a certain amount of space to it. It's made possible by how few elements often make up these beats. And I think that's true a lot of your music, Tommy. Like, the projects Billy and Couch come to mind. There's a certain atmospheric feel to your work. So, Dave, I'm wondering for you if production or beats like this sort of enable you to, like, visualize things. I know you've worked in the visual arts, so I guess I'm really just wondering about the connection between visual arts when you hear a production like Tommy's and how that lends itself to the writing.
I mean, yeah, that's how I react to music in general. Like, he makes very expressive stuff, so it's easier, you know, it's easy with a lot of his beats. But that's just kind of how I look at making music. Like, it all hits me in the same place. Like, I see it and I see things and I write what I'm seeing with it. Like, like, I, you know how Kanye and Pharrell say they got synesthesia and everyone's like, it's so amazing. And it's like, it seems really cool. And I'm like, I don't want to sit here and I've got that. Like, I don't think I do at all. I've got a good imagination. And I'm not sure if I think when people say that, it's like, yeah, I've got synesthesia. Do you, or do you just have an active imagination? Like, I don't want to say like I see music, but like I see things. Like, I hear the music, I hear the sounds, and I'm like, oh, that sounds like this. That sounds like this. Like, Goodbye sounded like a airline commercial to me, you know, like, before I started writing, like, I heard it, and I'm like, this shit sounds like an airline commercial, like, and then I wrote a song about it, you know, and the baby talk sounded like a jazz club. I actually had written that song before, but, like, I decided to, like, do Ella and Satchmo. I was like, you know what, I'm doing them. How about if they were doing this song? And I really wanted to do more. I even when I hear it now, I'm like, I could have done better. I could have really, like, sat in a room and pretended I was Louis Armstrong in it. If I'd have went that hard, people would have heard it. But I went close. I didn't go all the way. But yeah, like, I guess I see the music. I see it, and then I write what I see. And his stuff was very, it was easy to do that too. Like, that's what would make me pick the beats when I was like, oh, I see something immediately. I hear it. I see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's what makes this this project as good as it is. The two of you clearly connected in that way. All right, I think it's time to change gears a bit and talk about Far Side. Now, in my younger days, I used to sport a shag. When I went to school, I carried lunch in the bag. Was forever for my teacher, because I knew I'd get a kiss. Always got mad when the class was dismissed. But when it was a session, I always had a question. I would raise my hand to make a stand, because through my chest can help me. Every episode, we ask our guests to pick an album that is either their favorite or somehow meaningful to them. Tonight, we're talking about The Far Side, Bizarre Ride to The Far Side. So, the first question I want to ask, which we often ask folks, is how did we get here to the Bizarre Ride?
I think what our obvious pick would have been doing a De La record, but the list of things that had been covered was pretty extensive. So we did bounce back a few different ideas. And then, Dave, you did have sort of an explanation as to why it was a good pick. Did you want to say that about Prince Paul?
Well, when we were when Mike was doing his What Had Happened Was episodes on Paul, I was there. And Paul answered, I don't know if it actually made the show, but he had asked him if there was an album that you could have worked on that you never did work on, which one, what album? And Paul picked Bizarre Ride to the Far Side. He said, like, that was an album he heard that he was like, oh man, that sounds like something I would have done. Like, I wish, you know, wish I'd have been a part of it. And like, that's one of the few albums he said that he could say that about.
Yeah, which is funny because I think a lot of people sort of viewed that record as the, as a response to De La, like the West Coast response to De La. What are your earliest memories of this album?
Passing Me By and just like high school, just hearing this song out of nowhere, not really knowing, not knowing who the Far Side was at all, and just hearing that song, and like, it was just like, you know, a cassette tape viral last song, like unmarked cassette tape, not like it wasn't from the store or anything. When I was first getting into it, it was just tapes in high school when I was like really starting to hear a large amount of shit. And yeah, this song was just on one of the tapes and didn't even know who it was, just knew the song, knew all the words before we even knew who it was. And yeah, just like one of those songs.
What year is this?
This is like 95, 96.
Okay.
Okay.
When it came out?
No. When he was listening to it, when he first heard Passing By. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess this is like 95.
Okay.
I can't pinpoint it exactly, but in high school, every day after school, I'd watch Rap City and CMC, which is like the Bay Area. I think they've expanded recently, but it was like the local music video show, and they would play lots of like Hi-Ro and stuff that I was really into, which was a good comparison to the Rap City version, which was like much more mainstream type of thing. So I can't really say if I knew the video for Passing Me By before having the CD, but I bought it at the Warehouse. Did everyone have the Warehouse? Is that a California thing? It's like
no, I remember the Warehouse.
CD Warehouse.
Oh, really?
It was like Sam Goody or whatever. It's like the mall store. Yeah. So I bought lots of CDs. So I had the CD, I feel like, pretty much close to when it came out. I can't remember exactly like the entry point, but it was, to me, it was a high school car type of thing. Like I had it probably before I was driving, but then when I was, it was something like I would listen to frequently in the car.
I should say that I lived in California, so that's maybe why I know the Warehouse.
That's what I've never heard of it.
That's put that together.
Yeah, and I was in Chicago, and I wasn't really, we didn't have cable. I didn't have a way to really watch too many videos. So I'm like, man, the album came out in 92. Why didn't I hear it for so long? It's just like, yeah, like it wasn't playing on the radio. And I guess I missed, you know, it had to play on some radio stations, but I guess I missed it. I was more of a city radio type of guy. I wasn't listening to the college station and stuff like that. I was listening to the main city radio station.
What was it about it that kind of drew you in?
Pass me, like the song, I mean, when I first heard that song, like it's the beat, the lyrics, the subject matter. Like I was in high school, I'm, you know, 15 years old in high school. I was like, oh yeah, this is real life shit, you know. There was a meme a few years ago with like somebody would say a line about like dog shit, and then they would have like a fly being like, oh, that motherfucker's spitting. It was like that was me with this song. They're like, oh, this girl, I can't get the girl that I like, you know, I'm in high school and I got a crush on the teacher. I'm like, these motherfuckers are spitting, you know.
I have a similar, I can remember watching the video at a friend's house, like three of us, and having a similar thing, just being whatever age I was, and sort of like, I didn't have a girlfriend, and it was sort of relating to this just like extreme, like long, like this sort of sad, I don't have someone, high school sort of longing. And like the video was really cool, and it kind of just touched on all those things. So yeah, I think I have some notes I wrote about the album, and I think the reason the album as a whole actually works so well is because they touch on all these subjects that are very relatable. They're just kind of like regular storytelling. So I think that song, I mean, the beat is amazing. Like I think to this day, one of the best beats ever.
Yes. And
the other thing I think really works is that it's a group dynamic and the exchange works really well. If it was a one person song, it may not have actually done the same thing, but everyone probably has like a tone or a different voice that they like more, or what the person says in their story. So the fact that there's more people on it, I think, actually makes it more compelling as opposed to just like one or two voices saying it. I mean, for me, the whole thing, the production is like one of the most compelling things. And it kind of ties back to the Prince Paul thing. Most of my favorite records are made by one producer. Not always. There's definitely good examples where it's like a collection of people, but I think it has like a really strong vision beginning to end. And that's because Jay Swift did most all of it one.
Were the two of you already like on to De La at this time before hearing The Far Side?
Yeah, I definitely. De La for me is one of the first things I heard back in, you know, 86 type.
Okay.
Type thing. Like De La is very early for me. So
yeah.
By the time I heard Far Side, you know, it definitely was like, okay, these dudes sound like what I like.
Okay.
I skateboarded when I was from like 9 to like 20 or something. So skate videos were always almost like early previews of the good rap music or just music in general. There were certain videos that had Hyro songs before they actually came out because they were all friends with those guys. Similar things. I may have even heard Far Side in a skate video first. So a lot of my taste comes from that stuff. So De La too, like those things were all in skate videos. So I didn't necessarily have friends or like a peer group that were influencing me in that way, but the skate videos were.
I feel like this album is in the group, like generally got thrown into like that alternative hip hop category. So I'm wondering, like, when you think about this album and when you found songs from it, like how it compared to other things you were listening to, and if maybe that's why you liked it so much, because it sounded so different.
It didn't sound completely different from like everything else I was listening to. Like, I didn't find this so revolutionary in a sense because I had been listening to De La and Tribe and like other things that like in that vein. I didn't have a big preconception about what like the West Coast was supposed to sound like and all that, or that they were from California when I was hearing it. So it wasn't like it was just part of a mixtape for me, and it was just like, this is dope. And that song stuck out just because it was one of the dopest songs on the mixtape, but not, I didn't find it revolutionary in any kind of way or like surprising. It wasn't surprising. It was just like something I didn't know about that now I knew about and was the shit, but it didn't catch me off guard, I guess.
Mm. Yeah, same for me. I don't have any memories of thinking it was different. It actually was just more of what I liked. Mm-hmm. So I didn't even process it. I was looking stuff up online recently, and it does get called alternative. I think, to be honest, all that web stuff, just calling it alternative means that it was popular beyond people that listen to rap.
Yeah.
Because there's not really anything like alternative about, like, Passing Me By is not alternative in any way, really.
Right.
So, yeah, for me, it wasn't that it was like, oh, this is different. It was just like, oh, this is like exactly what I like. I like all of this. And I don't remember thinking it was different because I was listening to like De La, Tribe. Hyro would have been after, I guess, the first Delt. But I had stuff that kind of was in that style. So like to me, it was like, this is just a really good version of it. And I don't think it's like that far off of like the Black Sheep album. Like to me, there's a lineage there of like the production on the Black Sheep album is close to this one. My other comparison point is I feel like they're like the new leaders of the new school. And if you listen to it with that in mind, the thing that's great about Leaders of the New School is the energy and all the ad libs. They're just constantly backing each other up and they're like yelling in a sense. And this album has the same thing, basically. Like there's so many ad libs. I think that's actually one of the best things about the record is they're constantly backing each other up. And I know I'm talking long here, but so they were dancers first. The three of them were, I don't think Fat Lip was part of the dancing they brought him in. But in thinking about all of this, I kind of processed it. Like, I think that the music themselves is representing, it comes from them being dancers. Like when it's not their solo, they're backing the other person up. And they're doing the like ad libs that like emphasize what the person is doing. That sounds like some crazy philosophical take on it, but I could see that whole evolution of things. They were backing people up dancing. Their whole point is to support people. Then they form this group. And when it's one person's turn, they're constantly just adding on to that person. And really, like, if you took all the ad-libs out, the album would probably be so much less interesting. It's something, to me, it's like, it's kind of sad that it doesn't really happen anymore. And I think it's just the nature of the way people record. And I think it was maybe their age. But you don't get so much of that, like the, like De La Records have it too, where there's some really like scripted ad-libs from like characters that play parts in it. You just, there's not as much of that these days where like people are going to take the time and get the people in the room together to do it. And I think that's like the most compelling thing about this record is there's just like an energy that runs through it. And I think it's that group dynamic. You can even hear on the second album, it's gone.
Yeah, it's different.
And it's probably because they weren't like feeling the same way about the whole process, about each other.
Yeah, the last thing I wrote down about the album this week was I miss groups. Because I like walked away from it from that with that same feeling. Like you just don't get that kind of energy anymore.
Yeah.
And it's because there's so few groups.
Mm-hmm. And if it is, it might be like they're recording and sort of more disjointed. Like someone does something at their time, someone comes in at a different time. And they came out of like this sort of after school group. That's where they sort of like formed everything.
I think a lot of it is their age and them being in the same room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like the subject matter. I mean, listening to the songs, some of them, it was like, man, these are some young songs. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Like
for
sure. They were young when they wrote them, and I was young when I heard them, and it was all a perfect mix. And now, it's not. I think one of the thoughts I came away with was that it got stronger. The album got stronger in the end.
And yes.
And like the second half of it is where it shines, and like those are some of the greatest songs ever. But that kind of makes sense for a newer group, but I don't know how big of a part the sequencing and the order of the songs.
I did read something that they had like four other songs that they wanted to get on there, and they couldn't get them finished for different reasons. And if they did, they possibly would have ruined it. It would have been like, because it's long by today's standards, but it's still like beginning to end solid listen.
Sure.
But if you put four more songs on there, might have gone a little long.
The version that's on streaming, there's like a deluxe version on streaming that adds a bunch of stuff, remixes, a cappella, but there are two finished tracks at the very end. And I thought the same thing. Like, this would be too much. It's too long.
Better as a B-side than on the album. Yeah, I think the whole thing, like, if I understand it correctly, Jay Swift did the music. So it's kind of got this format of live band interlude that either sets up a song or is its own standalone thing. I believe he played most of that stuff himself. And then he did all the beats except for Other Fish. So it has this like flow. And I think that's why the skits and the interludes actually work, is because they're not beats. There's not like really like stale in any way. The music is just kind of, it's like a really flowing type of thing. It never goes too long. one thing that kind of caught me, if you look on Spotify, even every song has a million plays on it, even the skits, which for an album that old, they don't always translate over to the streaming world that way. Like maybe Passing Me By gets all of the streams and then you've got 40,000 on the first skit. But so I would translate that as people have listened to the album beginning to end a million times. Like every skit's got it. So I think it like it holds up in a way. And like we were all saying, if it came out now, maybe it wouldn't do the same thing, but it came out at a time where probably the biggest audience was of the receptive age, where all that content meant something to us. Yeah. We had CD players or were in cars. Like it, the formats worked. It caught us at a time where it may not do the same thing, but it's pretty cool seeing that it actually still carries on to this day. Like it's not dead. Like you can look up some other sort of big albums from that time and they're dead on Spotify. They just do not translate. But this one seems like it has caught on. And the other thing we were talking about, the age, I looked it up. They were, so J Swift was 20, assuming this is 91 when they are doing it, he was 20, Slim Kid Trey was 21, Fat Lip 22, Booty Brown 22, Imani 20. So they were, it was actually older. It was, yeah, yes. I was going to say it's older than I thought. But the one thing I was thinking about, the thing that probably saved it is they were old enough to not have it so immature that it doesn't stand up still. Because for the time and some of the stuff they're talking about, it surprisingly has, don't quote me, but it does not have any super cringe, like, oh my gosh, like that they should take that off things. Like there's really honest things, but I don't think they say any like really offensive, you know, like by today's standards, like it actually holds up pretty well. They do say some stuff that's like, you know, kind of sort of a shocker, but nothing that's like, oh my gosh, that's like wildly offensive. Maybe it had that sort of juvenile topic, but they were old enough to edit themselves by the time they were recording it.
Even the verse, I can't remember whose verse it is, but the verse about him being like tricked by a trans,
trans fat lip.
Yeah. I mean, even that, and that could have gone way worse. Like it could have been much worse.
It could have been mean and offensive, right. But instead it's like sincere and just honest. And like, who was doing that?
Right.
Admitting that.
Yeah.
I didn't really consciously think about until I was listening to this album this week, but like the instrumental interludes and just the instrumentation in general used on here, I really thought about the Roots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it really reminded me of, like, the structure. And I had never really considered that before, like, when I was listening to this album. And I don't know why I thought about it now, but I was just like, huh, it's interesting.
It's tough because there's not always credits for everything. And I don't think they list who plays everything, but I'm pretty sure J Swift did most of that stuff because he was a multi-instrumentalist and his dad was like a salsa band leader, so he came up in this kind of musical family. So I think it, like, to that, it they work really well. Like they're not like amateurs, you know, like, hey, we're gonna try this kind of thing. Like they right. sound really good. I think they don't like overstay their welcome, plus like they have like kind of funny stuff on top of it. Another, so like two comparison points I kind of had for the LONS thing, and then on the other side of it, so it actually came out after, but the Freestyle Fellowship Inner City Griots album actually has a similar format, but not as committed to it. Like they have the live band transitions and then they have the production songs, but this one just like really sticks to the idea and sees it through all the way, where the Fellowship one, they're not, I'm not even comparing the two, but there, it is kind of compared to the four person group. They're both four person groups. They both have that sort of like live band LA thing. And it's interesting because I would rate both groups similarly. And I like them both equally in that sense. And the Far Side one has translated to the general population completely differently. If you were to look at Spotify, which is interesting because they live in similar spaces in my head. But yeah, I had not thought about a lot of these things before we were coming on here, and I am a librarian, and I just did all this kind of did this kind of research stuff. So it was cool for me looking into it. If for any of the listeners or for any of you, if you want to check something out to kind of like blow your mind in terms of J. Swift's progression, it's Keisha Jackson, a song called Feel You Out. So it's from 91. So like when they're working on this album, just go listen to that song. He produced that song. It's like a new Jack Swing. It's pretty mind blowing to think that person made the Bizarre Ride album. It's worth checking out just for that comparison point that it's like the same year.
Yeah. Did either of you get to see them perform live?
I think I did, but I think I may have actually seen them in one of the odd years where like they were already fighting and one person was gone and they may not have been able to use the name.
I saw Fat Lip do a live show once where he had some project coming out, and I was it was like at this place, Dynasty Typewriter in LA, so it's kind of a small place, just like physically, like it's a decent spot and there's cool shit that happens there, but it's not a huge stage. It's like usually more of a theater or a comedy type place. But anyway, I was like going crazy because it was like Fat Lip doing songs, and like he was doing Passing Me By, and I was like kind of backstage, like just getting into it, and he saw me and he called me out on stage and had me do most of the song, and then so he could just do his verse for that. Wow. And for Running, and like it was kind of incredible. It was, wow. I never saw it coming, and I think I did Passing Me By and Running up on stage, and like I did everything, and he took it as like an opportunity to not, like, he didn't have to rap the whole song and he can just wait and then just jump in and do like his verse, and like really, it wasn't, I don't know what possessed him to let me do that, but it was amazing. That was the only time I ever met him.
Yeah, the fifth member of the Far Side, Video Dave. No, yeah. We didn't know.
Nobody will believe it. Fat Lip will not verify this story, I'm sure. I doubt he remembers this shit. I doubt he remembers it. But yeah, that shit was kind of crazy. Like,
that's amazing.
We didn't know each other. We didn't like stay in touch or anything. Like, we met backstage in the green room. He saw me, he was like, come on out. Just had me do it. It was
that's
great.
Pretty incredible.
I love it.
That's amazing. One last little bit, if people are interested in this record, there, Max Bell, he wrote an article on J. Swift, which is worth checking out, because if I don't know if people are familiar with J. Swift's story, but he has a pretty kind of like a tough, sad story. But there was like a sort of exploitative documentary, which I'm not recommending that part, but he recently got deported. Mm. He was like touring and there was some miscommunication and he got deported. The thing that's so, this album is so fun and joyous, and I feel like so much sadness ends up coming out of it. Like, the second record shows it. They had like a 15-year run where they like split in half and they're like, can't call themselves the Far Side. They're like these different versions, and I don't even know where it's at right now, but J. Swift left, had all this trouble. It's like really interesting because it seems like a crystallization of like fun and like happy times for these guys. And most of the stuff afterwards has like a cloud over it. Mm.
But it did bring us J. Dilla. So things That's happen true. For a reason.
Worth it.
There's an interesting story about, I think they've told it a few times, but he sent the beat and it was in his drum programming style. And I forget which one of them, somebody was like, what's wrong with it? And they quantized it and put everything on beat.
Yeah. Fat Lip tried to change the beat timing on Running. It's no wonder they kicked him out of the group. All right. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you being here with us and talking about the album. I can't wait for people to hear the album. Is there anything that you want folks to know about where to find it, what to look out for?
There's going to be vinyls on Fake Four, like through their Fake Four Bandcamp. There's going to be pre-sales available July 7th when the album comes out. We're going to have some cassettes that I'll probably try to sell some on tour. me and Tom probably sell some online, each of us sell some online, but I'll be selling mine on tour also. Yeah, listen to it on both of our Spotify's, wherever you stream. It's gonna be on my Bandcamp also. Listen to it wherever. I don't care where you listen to it. Just listen to it and tell people, share it. There's gonna be more videos. I already got one video. There's more videos coming. Yeah, I don't know. We spent a lot of time on the album. I hope people like it. Y'all like it?
It's very good.
Sure, yeah.
It's very good.
Thank you. Yeah, that's my same hope for me. I hope people just listen to it. It resonates and just tell someone about it. I feel it's that type of record to me, that like it's kind of a word of mouth record. I think it was just us doing us, and I hope it translates that way, that it's just we had fun making it. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. Yeah, we certainly like the record. That's why y'all are here. So appreciate y'all. All right, folks, this has been The Next Movement. Thank you for listening.
Peace.
Hey, happy new day. Shout out to people who are hard of hearing. I got them hot tortilla fingers. I got a bunch to eat. I need to hit the skillet for a minute. Chop it up and add spinach. I turn into my favorite cook. No school of books to inspire. I'm never shook to flip tortillas on an open fire. Like chestnuts roasting. Jack Frost was boasting. He said he knocked you the fuck out. And the part of the story that stuck out was the part about the wailing. He said that he sent you sailing through the air, and when you landed over there, you let out a deep and pitiful moan. I know it's true, cause people show me video phone footage looking like you had a bad day. I guess it's okay for you to say things that I can't say. There's no way Jose Canseco could ever see Roberto Clemente. I'm saying, not even on his best day. Sammy Sosa should have did commercials for Motorola when his arms was big, like the size of boulders. They was back in like 1998, 1999. What a time. I used to party hard. I was in my...